Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 196 for April 21st, 2014. I am Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
I'm hyped up on candy.
Oh, sorry. I'm Joe Steinkamp. There may have been a spring bunny that came by and left
around
stuff.
The office. Yeah. Really? Yeah.
Cadbury eggs versus Reese's peanut butter eggs. Fight!
Were you the guy that ate like 100 peeps in 2 minutes?
No. Oh my goodness. 100 peeps in 2 minutes and 10 seconds from a competitive eater who was asked to do this. And then the quote that I love best, I don't feel so good.
I don't either. Just thinking about that.
Oh, right. And the sugar intake. And that would be like one pixie stick at Halloween or something. That would be like, wow. Now, why does the song from Ozzy Osbourne, Flying High Again, come to mind? I don't know. You might need it, though, Jamie, to, well, I don't know, deal with progress bars?
Oh, yeah. You mean like updates? Like Windows 8.1 updates?
Yes. Don't call it a service back. It's been around for years. Oh, wait. That's, don't call it a comeback.
Yeah, just like we won't call modern apps Metro.
No, we'll call universal, because that's a new term we're going to use. Universal apps that will run on all of our platforms. It's a one Windows world, or so they keep telling me in all the announcements. So the article that we have here from Ars Technica says that perhaps the idea of service packs are now gone and have been replaced by the word update, because it's, you know, kinder and gentler, and actually something that's been used in the term in the Xbox world for a long time, fall update, spring update. And, well, it seems like Microsoft was being this, if you don't update to the latest version of Windows, we're just going to stop making security updates for you, which is kind of the way that they had done it with service packs in the past. Unlike service packs, though, they were kind of, well, friendlier to corporations and said, yeah, you got about 90 days. You could actually not do the roll-up, or here's a little thing from a KB article that you could roll, and you can test this update to make sure that everything is working before you push it out. No, this time they decided to pull somewhat of an Apple and say, look, everybody kind of sort of needs to get on the good foot with this update to Windows 8.1. And unlike Apple, there are millions more people using Windows than Macs, and millions of voices screamed out in pain and said, oh, no, you don't. And Microsoft, in its trend since 2011, you know what? Yeah, you're right. We won't do that then.
We didn't mean it. We did by this, we actually meant you still have some time. But I think they used to have a much bigger window, and now they have decided on 90 days.
90 days was around the target, but yeah, it wasn't too
well. It used to be, it used to be like 100 and at least 120 and maybe a little longer. And the thing is that all these enterprise people were still in the middle of actually updating to 8.1 or getting some of the updates to that. And now it's like, oh, but we were just in the middle of rolling out that. And now we have this update. And now we got to go back and test all this stuff. And we're like halfway rolled out on this. What do we do? But I think everybody is moving toward the, we're going to update OSs all the time, you know, whether we need to or not, because newer, better, bigger, faster.
No going back.
So the day's going to come then when someone's going to be able to say, yeah, I work for an IT department and my job is I update Windows.
That's what I do all day long. That's what I do every day, all day, every day.
I've been updating Windows all the live long day.
Exciting job.
Updating Windows, it just won't go away. Everybody. No, I'm sorry.
He has had candy, hasn't he, Ricky?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to get onto the mailbag for
sharing.
Sharing
is caring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a good idea.
I left you a note, and it's in PowerPoint. I was playing with this PowerPoint.
If I had an iPad, I could probably read that in Office for iPad. Although, why bother? Because it's only been like 4 years that Microsoft has had the opportunity to do this and never did. So a bunch of other people kind of took their place. And that's what this article talks about that we have in the show notes in terms of why I can live without Office for iPad. Microsoft did not jump on this bandwagon immediately. So other apps came along. Docs2Go was a big one, which I really wanted to use, and it wasn't accessible. I haven't looked at it in a long, long time. There are numerous apps that do this. All you got to do is search in the App Store for Office, basically. And some of them are read-only, but most of them are not. You can go in and do some pretty major editing with these apps. Some of them are free. Most of them are paid. And yeah, you don't get every single feature that you would get from Microsoft Office, but how often do you use every feature that's included in Word? I mean, usually you just want to change fonts, maybe do some bulleting and make stuff look pretty. So Office for iPad is here now, but it'll be interesting to see if people are going to move to that in droves, because it is a subscription model. And yeah, you get the desktop versions of this and the web apps as well, of course. But are people going to be like, yeah, I'll do that, or I'm just going to stick with this $6.99 app and be done with it?
Is number one on the App Store? Yes. Has been for a while. More than 4 million people downloaded it within the first week. A lot of corporations will still use it. I think that's really the play, is that Microsoft has said, look, they're not going to buy services. They might not be using Windows laptops, but let's make sure that they're using PowerPoint or Excel or some other Office document in an iPad environment. And I think that's kind of why they did it. I think that's really what they really wanted more than anything else was, yeah, mea culpa, we may have been late to this party, but Office in the cloud, Office in major corporations, that's still our domain, and we can work within that ecosystem. And I still believe that Apple and Microsoft are a much friendlier corporational entity than people have a tendency to deal with. And certainly under the new Microsoft CEO, I don't think it's as contemptuous as it has been in the past or perceived in the past.
I think the issue, though, is obviously there are people buying into this Office for iPad and so on, but there are so many other options now. There's OpenOffice, there's Google Docs even.
But you got to train everybody on those.
Yeah, but they've had 4 years to do it. And, you know, they've survived this long without that stuff on tablets. So
maybe,
I don't know.
Might be people are still very comfortable with a big corporate account and saving in the documents and then pulling them over to SharePoint without any issues. And hey, you know that workaround we've been doing in IT for a while? Don't worry about that anymore.
Don't need
Here's
that
your corporate
anymore.
Account. Mm-hmm. If you tie that in, when they demonstrated this, what Nadella did was he made sure to mention, and here on my home screen is my Yammer app, my Link app. I mean, he played straight up enterprise, and he comes from an enterprise background. So I don't know that Microsoft cares about chasing the consumer dream. I think Microsoft wants to make sure that it entrenches itself within the place that it works best in the enterprise. And in that presentation on the iPad day, he did mention that it was all programs on all platforms, which is a very familiar concept here at Cerotech. And so yes. Felt kind of deja vu-ish, but it was definitely an idea where they believe that they can have a footprint on every platform and bring you the information to whatever you decide to bring in the BYOD universe.
Interesting that there's been a discussion on the Mac Visionaries list about Office for the Mac, the new version that is apparently being written in Cocoa. So there's hope that there may be some accessibility there.
Yay.
That there hasn't been in the past. Mm-hmm. And someone said, you know, well, why? Who needs it? Why do you even care? There were plenty of people that came back and said, look, if you want to make sure that things are formatted well,
conversion.
There are still reasons to have mm-hmm. Office on multiple platforms.
Education, even more so than government sometimes.
Yeah. something to talk about on an upcoming Triple Click Home, perhaps.
Ooh.
There you go.
That would be a cantankerous argument. I'm thinking of Alina.
Ah, yes. Yes.
We what if we could get her to use a Windows phone?
You know, that would be quite interesting. 30 Days with a Windows Phone by Alina Roberts.
Highly edited by Patrick idea. Purdue and Derek Lane. Yes.
It will take both of them to get this job done.
A Herculean effort. Beep, 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 beep,
yeah,
beep, beep.
Heavy use of the beeps that beeped out all the swear words end up actually spelling out some sort of something in Morse code. Perhaps a swear word in Morse code.
No, that's just Alina using the Windows phone. No, that's me.
But from a source none other than Mr. Paul Thurrott here in this review, apparently narrator is in the latest update. Yay, it really is.
Now, this is not an official update per se. What this is the classic, those of you in Apple world knows this one, become a developer and get an ability to download the Windows 8.1 preview. Yeah. And so this is not rolling out yet. This is not completely official. It is official in that it is a preview. It is available to be tested, but things like enabling narrator from boot and the like are not something you can do yet. And I talked with somebody offline who might be able to do us a little bit of a discussion on Windows Phone in a week or so. But that individual told me that you cannot enable it right now without sighted assistance, but that's not a knock against it because this is not an official release yet. So. Right.
No.
Until it's rolling officially, we can't say whether this is a good or bad thing that you can or cannot launch Narrator with or without sighted assistance. I think I put enough kind of disclaimers there.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful site that, you know, some of the reviews have been, this is a 0.1 update that feels like a full number update. And of course, if it adds some form of speech to it, then woohoo, yes, I'm all about that concept. And I'll say it publicly, I would consider a Lumia or said such phone if there is some type of good narration on it. Of course, I'm not an app hound. So when people ask me, you know, oh my God, how could you do that? What the iPhone or Android phone? And no, if it's a good platform, it's a good platform. And I'm mildly interested to see what does and does not work. I'm also very disappointed with the state of Android handsets. I'm not wild about what I have available in front of me. I've hit this kind of moment, and they were talking about this on Twit. The hardware is not the key anymore. That's not the differentiator. That really isn't why I want a phone. Even the Moto X, which was my phone of love until recently, the hardware specs, that was a mid-level phone, and it's still performing pretty well in benchmark tests up against something like a Galaxy S5. So I'm in the phone blasé blues, if you will, until maybe July when my contract runs out. It's going to be very interesting. I'm going to have the Jamie dilemma.
Name now.
Do I get the iPhone 6 when it comes out? Well, sure. Why not? I probably will.
Yeah.
Sucker.
Yeah. Hey.
But it might be bigger.
It might be bigger.
I recommended that he do that. So
the question
I'm
is how much bigger? That's the real question.
About the size of a new Apple TV. No.
Yeah. Well.
This is, here we go again with Apple rumors and stuff. You know, some manufacturers make cases, and this is the weirdest practice ever. I don't quite get this. We're going to make cases like based on what might happen. So, yeah, we'll just make a bunch of these and hope that Apple does what we think they will. But some of these cases are actually, they're working closely with Apple supply chain, and they have a bit of inside knowledge, and we don't know which one this is, but there are rumors that there are major changes coming to the iPhone 6, including 4.7-inch screen, which, must it be this big? Really?
Yes.
Must we do this?
Yes. Yeah.
No.
For your selfies.
Just so wrong.
For the selfies.
For the selfies. I did it all for the selfies. That's just, I don't want this. Also, a power button on the side instead of the top, and weird thingies with the volume buttons. I think they're moving to the other side, maybe.
So much for wearing those tight jeans.
Yeah, right. You'll be butt dialing people like crazy. And there's also the rumor that maybe they're going to make a phablet too. And as our very own Boris said on Twitter at one point, would they call this the iFad or the iPad Micro? You know, what are they going to call this if they make a phablet? Which, please don't do this. iPhone macro.
Well, they haven't stuck Air on it yet, so there's still the iPhone Air to happen.
Well, this is true.
Where are all those discarded cases that have no home, and what do we do with them? Because you know there's a bunch of them somewhere.
Yeah, they're next to ET cartridges in Arizona from Atari.
I think it just melt them down and like put them in, use that material to put in 3D printers to print yet more cases that nobody's going to be doing anything with.
Right.
Well, maybe they could be cases for an Amazon phone. Although I don't think I want Amazon Kindle Fire Phone. That just
Fire Phone.
That sounds terrible. Fire Phone Pocket. Could be free though.
It could.
There is a discussion happening, and by no means is this for sure. But people who are familiar with the matter, whatever that means, say that there could be a Amazon phone lurking in the woods for Christmas and to steal thunder away from everybody's updates. If so, this would be interesting because there's a rumor that it could go one step further than Google and be totally subsidized with your Amazon Prime account. So here's a free phone.
Which would then be raised to $149 or more. And even those who don't care about the, quote, free phone are paying for your freaking free phone.
And all our cruddy television that we're developing to keep up with the Joneses at Netflix and Microsoft and other places. I don't want to speculate on what a Amazon phone could be running. Probably Android or the modified version of the Android open source operating platform.
I can't see why they would rename this or redesign something.
And I would have said it would have TalkBack inside it until the Amazon Fire TV showed up. And now I'm not so sure.
Right.
You know what I think? I think Amazon actually likes it when people protest. It somehow makes them feel all warm and fuzzy. You know what? We haven't made blind people mad in a little while. Let's not include
You know what's really going to make that segment of the market really honk off? Let's hide accessibility. No. It's there. It's just like an Easter egg hunt. You have to go find it.
And then when they get all mad and they come and do a protest at our headquarters or they flood us with emails and stuff, then we can be all like heroic and say, oh, you're right. Okay, we will do this for you because we're all nice like that.
Yeah, we totally learned this time.
This time. <Yeah. laughs> We'll see you again on the next update.
And we put a kill switch in it. Maybe we did. There was a counter article to this article that we have in the show notes at serotalk.com that says partially what's said here, which was we almost didn't get this kill switch for major manufacturers because of greed and the ability to charge you for said such feature.
Something that will deter theft, they say.
It'll cost you.
Yeah.
Seems counterproductive to being able to turn off the phone, but... Apple and others have agreed to what law enforcement has been asking for a very long time, which is, can you just turn that off remotely? I mean, you already have a network. They're always talking to it, and it would be really cool since you know just about everything else, what's going on the phone. If you could turn that off, that would be kind of neat. And there's even, there was an article I saw last week. We don't have it in show notes. I think I tweeted it or Sarah Talk tweeted it about how your use of a touchscreen is unique. I guess unless you're a voiceover user, then it might be kind of pattern forming, flick, flick, swipe, swipe. But you can determine the way that some people interact with their smart devices by the way they touch or how they touch or the pressure that they touch or the way that they interact with their devices. And that, too, could be factored into a kill switch to let someone know that, hey, somebody borrowed my phone for a moment. Oh, no, now my phone's turned off. Wait a minute. It's like the credit card company. Yes, I was traveling. no, this is my card. It's me. No, I know I normally don't buy six pairs of shoes, but today they were on sale. Can you turn my card back on?
Except that I was actually tweeting from a taxi and the driver was a little erratic in his driving. And so that's why that accounts for the change in pattern. And thank you.
Why
for
were you driving
your phone
recklessly? That's
right. Yes.
Nicely done.
Now I have to turn my phone back on in a strange city. That's awesome.
Visiting my parents. I was there when one of those calls came in about, we have gotten a call. We're getting your Windows machine calling in and leaving us messages, and we need to help you with that. Oh, really? You're getting a problem with the Windows machine? Yeah, we really, really are. Okay, what version of Windows is it? Long pause. I have several computers here. Why don't you tell me a version of Windows?
Seven? I meant eight?
Vista XP?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, oh, I love those. It was great. So could you imagine the calls you would get on a kill switch?
I have half threatened, and we may actually do it sometime. I would love to put in the show notes sometimes some of the spam that comes across our blog occasionally. The wording is just awesome. You know, I have read this blog and it was for me a wonderful experience. It's like, oh,
it is like you have reading my mind and your expert matter in this subject so great.
Hello, beloved.
Yes.
That is one of my all-time favorite spam emails. It starts off that way and just gets worse.
No,
and worse
my credit card company does not call me that. See you. And I don't call them that either, come to think of it.
Not at the first of the month, I don't. You know?
Well, Discover Card calls me that sometimes when they're doing this promotional APR. You know, yeah, hello, beloved. This is just for you.
It's Valentine's Day, and you might have actually struck that from your spam filter, but hey, I'm just saying, hey, beloved.
Well, you could just roll your phone up, Ricky, and stick it in your back pocket or I don't know, stretch it out or make funny little designs with it or
play frisbee with it, stuff like that. Yeah, I could do that if it were made of graphene. I probably can't do that yet, but
probably not.
Graphene is pretty cool stuff, actually. And I like that they are really researching the uses for this because it has certain properties that nothing else really has because of the way its carbon molecules fit together. And it can be super, super thin, but also flexible and strong. So it's kind of like the ideal material for all sorts of stuff. It could make for longer battery life, much thinner phones that are, you know, all bendable and stuff. It can be waterproof. So graphene, I really expect to see a lot more done with graphene. And check out this article because it talks about five ways in which graphene can be super awesome in your electronics.
Would we want a cane made out of graphene? That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Depends how lightweight.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. It could be flexible, but you can also, depending on the number of layers of graphene that you had, it can be still flexible, but also, you know, transmit that feedback through the thing that you really
first
need.
First carbon fiber pencil thin canes, and I went out in a windstorm.
I did not like those. I didn't like it at all.
I am now Harry Potter, like doing wands and spells and extremiomus stop wind.
That's funny because I've threatened to play with one. I've never seen one, like for indoor use or something, just light use. I've thought about getting one.
It feels like using a an antenna that you had on your old boombox.
I'm with really going to have to get one, course. Just because. That's awesome. Yeah.
In fact, I'm having trouble picking up a station. Can you bring a cane over here for a second? Attach this
hold
with
that
some tinfoil.
Like
it's like a coat hanger and done. All right, there we go. Now we pick up Quam. Awesome.
Did it break after two uses or did you get that far?
I never got that far. It looks like it would. It absolutely looks like it would just snap. But I didn't like it because there was not enough feedback for me. You know, when I hit something, it better
you
know it's
that
been
puppy
hit
really good.
That's right.
I'm at convention trying to find my hotel room. Hey, I'm on the 8th floor. It's 2 in the morning. Oh, I found the ice machine.
Hope that door has safety glass. Let's find out.
Oh, no, I'm actually on the 7th. Yes, I know. Anytime I've played with new canes, I had one that I had played with a year ago that was carbon fiber-ish, and it was like a divining rod because the tip pointed down to the ground, and I was like looking for water more than I was using my cane. And you forget just how many muscles are in your forearm until you got to swing something that you're not familiar with in a way. And just, I don't know. I've had long conversations with a good friend of mine who does mobility up at Chris Cole, and he tried to teach me the open palm technique, and he got mad at my pencil grip style. And I'm like, dude, I've been using it for 40 years. Don't mess with my, this is the way I do it, man. I can't, I can't learn something new. Old dog, new tricks and all that other jazz. Well, coming up after the break, Jamie finds out that music is darkest before the dawn. Ricky goes to Pandora. No, I don't mean to visit the Navi. And I'm going to give you the heebie-jeebies with contact lenses. No, all that and more. Ew, on Saratalk 196.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Saratech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Sarotalk 196, where we're not finished talking about the big story from last week. No, 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 no. There's still a lot of fallout and commits, lots of commits being made to the open source project that we have come to know and love as the lovely descriptive term Heartbleed. In fact, some people have made some weird kind of comments about, well, Bleed could do this and this and this. There's a bunch of myths out there.
It's a virus, right?
We discussed five of the 34% of United States peoples, when asked by, I think, Gallup or CNN, one of the two, 34% did not know what Heartbleed is, but probably knew who was in the finals for Amazing Race.
Yeah. Faith in humanity, approximately zero. But there are several things that are kind of misinformation about Heartbleed, and that's unfortunately not a surprise. When something this big gets out there, there's bound to be some misinformation flying around. But what did happen is somebody did get arrested for exploiting this, right?
At least one young man from Canada, 19 years old, got his name in the news because he managed to hack the CRA, I get the impression this is like the Canadian version of the IRS. I don't know if I have that correctly.
Oh, Canada.
Yes, about 900 people got perhaps hacked, but they were on it quickly. They got the problem resolved and found the young man. And so hopefully we won't have any more stories like this to report in the near future.
Canadian prison. They just take away your poutine and back bacon and—
Gonna have to put the cuffs on you. Sorry.
Oh, I understand.
Go right ahead.
Totally my fault. Oh, we're gonna get the hate mail.
Sorry, Canada. We love you, Canada. Yeah.
Well, I haven't offended Apple lately. Here, let me try that.
Oh,
Apple
that sounds
says,
good.
Yeah. Heartbleed did not affect any of their services nor their software, i.e., anything that we have, but of course, we never used one of those web apps on iDevices or Mac. You might hit that. But as far as we're concerned, oh, dude, we're totally cool. And here's a statement saying that we are.
Thank you, Apple, for assuring us yet one more time that all is well.
Relax. Do not panic. Well, you probably could panic if you're a heavy Pandora user. And I'm kind of lucky because I don't use the John McCain feature and don't update my apps regularly. So I still have an accessible version of Pandora. Many do not, however. It's not completely broken, but they have broken some aspects of accessibility here. Some unlabeled buttons and just not a welcome change for Pandora. But hey, you can always just go over to iTunes Radio. It's just as good, right? Wait.
I ran into, because you said it last week, I ran into the, you don't have any in your playlist. You don't have any in your iTunes.
Yeah. Ah! I said radio.
What part of the word radio are you misunderstanding, Siri? What? What?
You do not have Siri on this device. Sorry.
Then how did you answer me?
Yes.
Apple Maps to get a clue. Oh, no, wait, because sightings of the Loch Ness Monster have increased since the Loch Ness Monster showed up on Apple Maps. Perhaps outdoor navigation is kind of broken, or perhaps one day indoor navigation will join it in its brokenness. Apple is actually on a tear with the ability to add certain things with indoor navigation. We've talked about this a lot in the last year about what Apple's hoping to do with iBeacons, with the microphones that are in your phone, with the ability to know that you're going upstairs or on a ramp. All of that self-mapping technology seems to be all patentable and stuff, because that's what Apple done did. They went to the courts and said, here's one of those things where it's all patented. So it seems to be the next big race is indoor mapping. Now, this is a race I can get behind. Yeah. Between Google, Microsoft, and Apple, you guys go ahead and
y'all go fight it out and make it better for everybody.
Although those zombie shopping malls that are starting to happen more and more and more, maybe I won't need it there. Yeah. So you guys run out and map all those hotels, because it seems like all that's left are the big outlet malls in the middle of nowhere that I can't necessarily get accessible cabs or transportation to.
Well, you know, it's possible that you could find your way around one of these big old hotels with a graphical interface that Apple is patenting. I read this article like three times, and I'm trying to figure out what it really tells us that we don't already know, which is that Apple does have a touch interface, something about non-location-based multi-touch gestures.
Uh-huh. Waving your arms in the air like an idiot.
Well, I don't know. So Apple applied for this patent in 2009, and they just got it. And my impression was that they are talking about what is in VoiceOver right now, because you can flick to something and you can double tap anywhere on the screen and still activate that thing rather than having to have your finger right over it. And of course, there's multi-touch and you're using different touch gestures to do stuff accessibly on the device. So I couldn't tell, but I think they were talking about things that already exist in VoiceOver. But what does this mean to patent something like that? You know, it's
they patented the buffer.
That's what it feels like.
How do you do this?
Yeah.
And what does it mean? Uh-huh. So yeah, we have totally patented this whole thing. And now, hey Android, if you want to make stuff accessible, don't you dare use that double tap thingy. They need to like slap their palm on the device or something instead, because double tap is ours.
Yeah.
Amazon got one click, so this is ours. It belongs to for those who know their history, there have been some arguments over virtual buffer and or place markers and or things before we have seen so long ago, without going too far and naming names. I don't know. The new Galaxy Samsung S5, you can triple click home and bring up TalkBack.
What?
Yeah.
Can you really?
Yes. Yes, in the new Galaxy S5, there are some specific accessibility features that are only in TouchWiz, that are only on the S5, namely number one of those being triple click the home button.
So is this going to be kind of
on the home button area on an iPhone and bringing up TalkBack? We will see how long that'll last, because remember, this time last year, we were coming out of that fight in Germany between Samsung and Apple.
Right. Yeah, I was just about to say, it's not like Apple and Samsung are going to go to court with each other.
Now, before somebody jumps up and says, oh no, this is a war of accessibility, CarPlay. a lot of technology from speech reco and voiceover and text-to-speech are now in CarPlay, which, by the way, uses QNX, which is hysterical. Go BlackBerry for the win, not. But there's a lot of technology that has a spillover effect. And that would be, yes, it's great for us, but, you know, with a little tweak, a little mod, this works out just great for those who are not visually impaired mm-hmm. or, you know, maybe somebody's motor impaired or something like that. Mm. So the next big battle is health, whether it be Apple hiring people to do health book and wearables and that kind of technology, which, you know, there are filings that say that they are. There are leaks that said they are. They recently just hired this up-and-coming person who is good at getting things through the FDA and health and devices. Apple seems to be heading where Microsoft was 10 years ago and was rebuked, by the way. There was a lot of Microsoft health sites, and during the shadow of antitrust, Microsoft got smacked for doing it, so they backed off. But that, you know, it's a different world in 2014, and companies want that quantified self because that data is very, very popular and very, very marketable in all sorts of good and nefarious ways. Apple is working their way towards that. And so some of these interfaces could be leading not just to locking down voiceover, which it would have an effect thereof, but also future technology, which we're just now starting to learn about. You know, not all the cats are out of the Steve Jobs bag yet.
Oh, I agree. But I think that whether it is affecting voiceover, which it will be, or whether it is something a little more universal than that, it gets really weird. And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but trying to patent an interface. What happens when we get to things like, again, people want to talk to their devices. What if Dragon had said, whoever owns that now, Nuance didn't invent it, but what if that technology where you have to pay us every time you want to do any kind of voice recognition because we patented the idea that you speak to your computer, or, hey, yeah, you can wave at your Kinect and make it do things. Hey, let's patent that.
How would we have ever gotten to the keyboard mouse interface? How would we have ever gotten a GUI?
Yeah.
There has to be some FRAN and some universally accepted technologies as direct interaction. I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. We don't have that necessarily extending to us because what you have to do for access technology is seen as a non-standard way. Ha ha, bringing up a show title.
Yeah. Nicely done.
Yeah. So that's where the battleground is. I created a new thingamajig that allows me to do such and such in a certain way that's never been seen before, although it sort of has. We just didn't do it back in the days of Palm OS or other things, even Microsoft. In fact, there was a article that came out last week that showed a Microsoft training video that may have evidence to undo the Apple slide to unlock patent. And that happened years before the iPhone. We're talking early 90s. So these things can be undone. These things can be brought to justice. And hopefully one day cross patents can happen, licensing can happen, or these things fall out of the domain and go to the public in 19, 17 years or whatever it currently is from the time that it was granted to the time that it's, you know, enacted. And it's not that big a deal anymore, but is the bloom off the rose? And whether it be in the case of triple clicking a home button is ours and nobody can do that. Nobody ever thought of activating something with a triple click. And I think of Vista and or Vert from Telesensory. There are a lot of technologies that we've taken for granted that have just never had anybody do this. And remember, this came 2009. This is in the global thermal nuclear war era of Steve Jobs on Android. This is anything and everything you can do that to, go do it. And look how long it took. It took 5 years. And now is it even relevant? I'm not sure. Pinch to zoom? People found a way around that. But nobody's really ever done tap your finger on a phone number and have it dial. That's pretty much locked up with Apple the same way one click. Apple had to reach an agreement with Amazon to kind of sort of make that work. I don't know. It gets really icky and legally and probably something that would make some guy, some lawyer we know in San Antonio very excited. But I am not really interested in said such things. It's going to be very interesting. Now, our next story, Google patents the ability to use screens in contact lenses.
They're the only one who wanted that.
Yes. No fight at all on this one.
Ew. I can't use contacts, nor would I want to. Oh.
Weirdly, though, like, this makes sense because a lot of people do like contacts. Yeah. They don't want to wear something on their face. And so I can see this, but
let's put something on my eye, the most delicate thing in the world. Let's do that.
Yeah, but a lot of people do that. They shove these contacts in and they're either disposable or they have real ones that last for a long time, but they're so thin. How are you going to fit cameras in there?
The 90s during the rating season on 2020, they were talking about people who left their contact lenses in for more than 30 days that would peel off their corneas when they went to remove them.
Wow.
And having a corneal transplant and knowing how much pain that was, I don't like thinking about contact lenses in any way, shape, or form, even for for actors who have to do it in order to look more alien, you know, for years, like Brent Spiner for Data and things like that. Just, I don't want that in my eye. Don't want it in my eye. But some people do, like Ricky is saying. And certainly being able to glance up and see a screen or get information transmitted to you, like a heads-up display, would be helpful. Of course, I don't know if that means the person across from you sees the reverse information being broadcast in your eyes. And that's not nearly as distracting as some big thing on your face like glass. But Apple and Google do seem to be getting into more and more wearables. And I think there's an interesting discussion of, it's not whether we can do wearables now. Certainly the technology is rapidly approaching for us, but what's the point? What do we need them for? What is it beyond a phone? Why do we have to have these, or what do they do that phones or other devices don't, like the argument about smartwatches? There's a rumor going around at the time of this recording that Nike has disbanded the Fuel Band group and that they're getting out of wearables because they just, A, never really found traction with it, B, it didn't come off the way they thought, or C, it cost a whole bunch of money and it didn't really work out for us to be a first mover. And that gets into the whole, why did people buy a Pebble? What do Pebbles do? And there's actually some not so pretty conversations going on about the Galaxy Gear 2. In fact, the Ars Technica review was, we wear the Galaxy Gear 2 so you don't have to.
Oh, ouch. Hmm.
Yeah, that's a great opening line. Not link bait, by the way. That is a pretty nasty review. So I think we're going to have this push and pull as we find out what's next. You know, like I was saying earlier about phones, there's not a lot more we can do. We reached a saturation point in the technology and how smart they are and how powerful they are. And it comes down to, what can the software do for me? What can services do for me to make my life better? Is it a Google Now experience? Is it the Apple experience? Is it Microsoft waiting to decide what its experience is? Who knows? But I don't know that we have an idea in 2014 what an iWatch really could do for you.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, all this discussion of, well, the iPhone's not innovative anymore. It's like, what do you...
What is it going to do? Right. What do you want?
Well, yeah.
I want more audio games and I want them to be free and I don't want to spend any money to help out the developers who spend a really long time making audio games. Not that I've seen that conversation on Apple Biz once or twice. No.
Well, we could just go back to the days of AOL, I suppose.
You got mail.
Yeah.
You've got mail.
Interesting article here. Just kind of the history of AOL. And who knew that there was such an internal fight about releasing AOL Instant Messenger?
I still have an AIM account.
Yeah, I do too. And apparently this was a big deal.
I never was that crazy. I never really did that.
Yeah, well,
I didn't follow a trend. Go for it.
Oh, well, you were behind the times.
I know.
You were more of an ICQ person, but no, AIM
I was so still in my CompuServe Prodigy ICQ. I was so there. Actually, I was more of a message board person, so I did more well-engaged in early Pathfinder systems and things like that. I was way more static text than full-time chat.
There you go. AIM was kind of cool, though, especially when you do read about the history of this. Jamie is right. Essentially, the executives of AOL did not want AIM out there because it was something separate from AOL. So it was kind of out of AOL's control. Like, you could chat with anybody. Anybody could get an AIM account. They didn't have to belong to AOL. And it was free. Yeah. So AOL was like, we're not making money on this, so we should not do this. And they just couldn't get their heads around this could be a way to get people.
So let's go buy Netscape. And then let's go buy Winamp. And let's go buy, oh, wait.
Maybe if we just buy a bunch of people.
Several developers worked on this behind the scenes, behind their boss's back.
Yeah, so they'd slide all these features in. Ha ha, buddy icons. You didn't think we were going to do that. And they told us we couldn't, but here you go.
We did
that. And the best part was when they first introduced this, they put it on an FTP site that apparently hackers already knew all the addresses to their FTP sites, but there was never a link to it on a web page. So it was just sitting on this FTP site, and all these people went and grabbed it and started distributing it. And so, yeah.
Shareware never happened. Never, 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 never. You know, I was more familiar with Trillion, so I never really jacked with MSN or any of that. And I really didn't do that until late 2000s. I was late to the instant messaging party, because the problem I had was at the time that it was rising, I was working for the state and I didn't want to be contacted outside of work. It was like,
yeah,
you know, it was being, hey, what about the blah, blah, blah? No, stop. No, I even got like a permanent cell phone later in life rather than earlier. I dabbled with them, but I never had them. The form of instant communication really wasn't something that I got comfortable with until 2005. But so many people would have that in their profile at a message board. It was a dedicated field. Your AIM name, you know, mm-hmm. here. And there were, I used to see it on business cards. I don't see it anymore, but it used to be contact me on AIM.
Very, rather lengthy article, but it's pretty interesting. If you're interested in this at all, go check out the show notes and read this article discussing basically the breakthrough that AOL never wanted. Yeah.
No, now they have TMZ, and I don't want that either.
No.
Thank you, AOL Media.
Well, coming up after the break, your feedback, there's no tears in my beer, and Ricky has a story that's nothing to sneeze at right here on Sarah Talk Podcast 196.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Else encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 196. And look, an Easter basket on the table with mail in it, Ricky.
No candy. Hey, let's check this out. What
there
is
was candy.
This?
Look, there's wrappers.
But look. Look at all these wrappers. There's like, I know that packaging. That had some Reese's eggs. And oh, look at all these foil wrappers. Who ate this?
Mr. Easter mailbag.
I'm going to kill you. No wonder you're all hyper and crazy and stuff. Yeah, you. Yeah, taking the place of mailbag today. Mailbag's sleeping, and now you're the one all hopped up on sugar and stuff. Oh, look, wait, there's still some left. Ah, it's Peeps. Ate everything and left me the Peeps. Thanks.
They're green, too. The green is in color, not in moldy oldie.
Yeah.
Ooh, moldy Peeps. That's... We're going to move on to an eye report now. And this one comes from Bill, and he has a lot of interesting information about Google Glass. So let's take a listen.
Hello there. This is Bill Dangler. I'm calling in regards to some comments made about Google Glass. Yes, you can make video calls from Glass directly. You would say, okay, Glass, you hear the ding. Make a video call, you hear the ding, and then you say the name, and it will call through Google Hangouts. Unfortunately, due to the lack of a good accessibility system on there, in order to end the call, you need to press and hold the power button, and then the device will turn off, and then you just kind of reboot it again. And that is really your only way to end a video call. Same goes for a phone call, really. You have to power it down and then power it back up in order to hang it up. In some instances, doing a swipe down on the trackpad has worked. Although generally speaking, I have to reboot it. Or if I kind of swipe to the right, I'll hear the little clicks. And then the last one is usually hang up. Although, you know, I've had the most success by just powering it down and then powering it back up again. And that will generally hang up the call. As far as blindness-specific apps, I'm definitely interested in this. I was able to start an Android app called The Voice. You mentioned Seeing with Sound in the podcast, and that would be the app from Seeing with Sound. I was able to get that going. What I had to do was I had to install an app written by someone named Mike DiGiovanni called Launchy, and that app bound itself to the Glass Settings app. So you would open up Glass Settings, and it would give you an option, a complete action using type dialog, and it would give you Launchy or Glass Settings, and you just pick Launchy and use by default with this action, and that would launch your Launchy. And you would have options for Glass Settings and any other Android apps you installed.
See, this is cool. Some people were able to get in on the initial Google Glass Explorer edition, and they have interesting information like this to share. I'm cautiously optimistic that some of this will change and be a little better. I mean, especially even, why couldn't you just say, okay, Google, end call or something like that, instead of having to turn the whole device off? I guess they figure that you got this trackpad, you can do whatever on it, so we don't need to include that, but would like to see that. Bill also talked in this iReport. We weren't able to include it in its entirety, but he did talk about TalkBack. And the experience there is not a good one just yet. You'll get window titles, but actually moving through the applications is not such a happy thing with TalkBack right now. But thank you, Bill, for giving us kind of an overview of what Glass is like. We love information like that.
And keep us posted if you continue to use it and get more information, and especially if things change significantly, let us know.
Absolutely. So next up, we have two emails talking about the ongoing note taker versus iOS device debate. And we talked about this a bit on a couple of podcasts, at least, and certainly in 195. So first up, got one from Brett Wilhelm, and I'm just going to read this one. It's got lots of great points. He says, after listening to 195, I wanted to comment on the issue of Braille note takers versus iOS devices. Before I do, I will say I am a proud owner of both an iPhone 4S and Braille Note Apex BT. I feel I have the best of both worlds and can be more productive as a result. I'll now discuss the areas where I think my Apex does best, followed by the things iOS does best. So the Apex advantages are instant startup. The Apex powers on and is ready to work faster. The battery. The Apex has a longer battery life and its batteries are user replaceable. And let's not forget its longer battery life. Yes, think maybe it has longer battery life, perhaps. Number three, the Apex remembers its place in documents. Number four, no need for Bluetooth. Unless I need to use it as a Braille display with iOS, there's no need to use battery-draining Bluetooth just to get Braille access to the device. And that is actually pretty cool. You just turn it right on. It's all good. Lastly, one keyboard, one device. And now for the iOS stuff. You can charge it via USB. There's more stability. even though HumanWare has been constantly improving the stability of the Apex since its release, I find myself having to press its reset button on an almost daily basis. Wow. Yeah. App support, of course, is a big one. So he basically says that iOS devices and note takers still have a place in the blind community.
And I think we're starting to hear that more and more. I mean, there for a while, there was such the really actually kind of hostile debate between those who felt that way and those who felt it was iOS only. But I'm starting to see that kind of calm down. And I think people are finally coming to terms with the fact that there really is a place for both, and to each his own, and whatever you can afford, basically. Those two things kind of play in there as well. But definitely.
Screen locked.
Yes.
But it made a great tune, made a great song.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
it was worth absolutely. It. It was worth it.
That was, it was worth it just to get that song.
Those months of fun were totally worth it.
Yeah.
Last up, a blind educator writing in, and he says, "Hi, Sarah Talk hosts. After listening to podcast 195, I wanted to reply about a couple of things mentioned. First, I do have to agree with Mr. Steinkamp about fragmentation on iOS. It's funny.
Framing that.
It's funny that he keeps bringing up the original iPad, which stopped receiving updates since iOS 5.1, 5.1.1, actually. However, I did a full comparison of fragmentation between Android and iOS, but Apple has fragmented their OS since iOS 2 with the introduction to the App Store. And the original iPhone back in 2007 came out. That phone couldn't and would not support iOS 2. Second, the comment about note takers has been around since 2010 or even maybe earlier. I know the former CEO of Saratech has been against the, and I quote, blind ghetto products. But just recently, I heard someone mentioning that he himself is now using a BrailleSense U2 Mini. And I know you will have a lot of people writing in about the note taker discussion. So the note taker is as good as the user. If someone doesn't know all about what the product can do, then yes, the product will be a waste of money, like an Android or an iPhone.
I think you could flip that and say that about iOS or Android as well.
Exactly.
All of these products, note taker or mainstream device, have a ton of features, many of which we don't use. We being the collective, just the user in general.
The user, right.
But you need it. You look in the help docs, you learn how to use something, and you know, there you go.
Extend that out. Windows laptop and MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, VoiceOver documentation. Mm-hmm. Good grief. There are commands in VoiceOver for lots of stuff. That
yes.
There were 350 JAWS commands at one time that I used to know, and now I don't. So,
right.
it may help you if you live in Excel. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way with VoiceOver, there are some specific kind of cell and area commands that I will probably never use, but or have enough fingers to use, because that gets kind of freaky too. But that, I mean, the argument, he's right. The argument's been around for a long time. And in the early 2000s, it was Keynote Companion versus a full-blown Windows 98 laptop.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I remember that argument very, very well. And there was the, is it the Keynote Gold, I think? Yeah. So there was that, and you could... Mm-hmm. It was a laptop, and you could have that, and it had its own little DOS thingy with it. You couldn't run Windows on it, but people would spend a lot of time in Keysoft, and if they had to do something else like WordPerfect, they would just go into DOS and do that. And the other people, what about Windows?
Mm. Mm, that's gooey.
Yeah.
Like this Cadbury like that egg peep. That was left. Mm. Eech. Mm, here, you can have that.
Well, be sure and check out the emails in their entirety, plus a couple of blog comments by going to www.sarotalk.com. Look at the show notes, look at the links to all the articles that we reference in the course of this podcast, and there are many. And you can certainly check out the email feedback while you're there. Leave us a comment on iTunes as well. You can rate the podcast. If you would like, feel free to leave us an iReport using iBlink Radio on either your iOS or your Android device. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/SaroTalk. And finally, call the Blab Line, 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout.
Roundabout.
Well, according to a study that has just been completed in Coastal Carolina University. Now, which Carolina is that, by the way? I'm curious.
The one on the coast?
I don't actually know where this is. And it could be maybe straddling North Carolina and South Carolina. It's like, here is the campus, and there's a dividing line. There's this half, and there's
right
that
through
half.
The middle. It goes right through the arts and entertainment department.
But apparently, country music tends to be more upbeat, happier, sunnier in tough times. Pop music tends to be a little bit darker and reflect the actual mood of the country or what's going on during difficult times.
Yeah, you tell me on this one, musician man.
You know, at first I thought they were going to tell me that country musicians and fans just stick their heads in the sand and ignore trouble. And then I thought they were going to tell me that hard-working, dirt-slinging people just get in there and get their hands dirty.
Pull
and
yourself
look
up by your bootstraps.
Exactly. And, you know, there could be a little bit of both, actually.
More songs about dogs and pickup trucks when you're happy, less songs about drinking and being upset and fighting people while drinking in a pickup truck.
Right. Not scientific by any means, but I've done my own little study of songs during the World War II era, some of the most difficult times in our country's history, and the songs are all so happy and upbeat and so escapist that it's really kind of amazing when you listen to the music.
Oh, man. Show tunes are the same way. You know, blue skies are going to clear up, put on a happy face. I mean,
yep.
A lot of Gershwin comes to mind.
Yeah. Well, it tripped me out, the theory behind this. They were saying, Jamie, you had your ideas of why this might be. And in the article, they're basically saying, well, people who are listening to country music are predominantly working class, and people listening to pop music aren't necessarily. They may be in middle class and so on. And the working class parents are instilling in their children, yeah, life is hard and you're going to need to find some happiness somewhere here. So deal with it. And if you're not happy now, then fake it till you make it kind of thing. And the pop people, maybe whether it's they have it a little easier or they have a little more time on their hands or whatever, now they have the room to explore being all emo and, oh, I feel sad, and now I want to listen to this thing that makes me feel sad, and I can wallow in my misery.
Good night. What a general.
Exactly. Oh, it's man. So generalized. And then what do you say about people who listen to classical music? What's their deal?
They're non-existent.
They're not.
They give a lot of money to NPR. And
yes.
What a load of horse hockey. That is just.
I think it's crazy.
It's just a nice paper for someone to write that
they, I'm telling you, what kind of grant proposal slash doctorate was this person shooting for?
Taking
out David Allen Cole.
Yeah.
there's some amazing things listed in country music. While not as deep as, say, some prog rock or anything else like that, it doesn't mean that they don't, man, especially offshoots when you get into bluegrass and even into the blues itself. But man, that is just such a general thing. Now, I will say that atonally, a lot of modern day country music seems to be in the same key, which is kind of a thing we see in pop music as well. Mm-hmm. There's a great, if you ever go looking for it, Access of Awesome have a four chords video, which is just amazing how many songs use the same four chords over and over and over again. It's NSFW, I do warn you. So
yes.
If you do go looking for it on Twitter or on the YouTubes, be aware that there will be some nasty language in it. But, you know, there's a lot of commonality. When somebody finds a sound, everybody wants to rip that off, i.e. auto-tune. But I don't know. That seems kind of weird to generalize unless you look at that clip from, what was it, the hits of 2013 mentioned the words truck in almost every song. Or
really?
Yeah, there was a famous one that showed up on College Humor, where it took all the hits of 2013 country music, and they were all pretty much very similar in their link. Yeah, you remember that, Jamie?
Not that specifically, but I'm just thinking there was a rash of like, this is my town and I'm proud of my town. And then we have a water tower and church. And there was like a half dozen country songs that had that almost the same melody and the same theme. I was like, really? Okay. I guess this is working for you guys. So you're going to make a little money on it. But
reminds me of the old days of Blind Cool Tech. This is my space. And I'm walking through the hallway. And this is where my kitchen is. And I make food here. Yeah. And, remember when there was like John Space?
Space, and they would all kind of sound the same. They all had the same approach, sort of. I'm starting at my front door, and here's where it opens, and here's how it shuts.
Oh, they were great. They were just, oh my gosh.
Yes.
Kind of like to bring that back, a retro sort of.
There you go, audio boo people with your more than 3 minutes of time.
I always thought Blind Cool Tech Radio would be cool. And that would literally be a station of nothing but old random episodes of Blind Cool Tech.
Oh, wow. You'd hear Larry Scoot Con going to work. Come on, Jake, hop up, little buddy.
Yep. Boom, hit that branch.
Interviewing people at the breakfast table.
Yep. You know, interviewing Nana Portwasaka about the old Oasis phone.
Yeah. I wonder if anybody still uses one of those.
I heard about one person who did, and they were talking about it finally dying. I don't remember where I saw that, but it was very recently.
Wow.
JJ actually got an Opticon 2 but doesn't have the power supply and was looking for one. I was like,
wow.
You can still find the manuals for that over at Freedom Scientific.
Been kind of a blah day, Ricky. I think it has something to do with the fact that my nose is running and my head's a little, a little cough. It has something to do with springtime and allergies and stuff.
Yeah, spring is in the air and so is a bunch of pollen. So we have this article that kind of talks about the science behind why this happens and kind of what the timetable is. Plants in spring, grasses in summer, they're basically releasing their pollen in hopes that the wind or something is going to go and carry this around to different places and, fertilize and make seeds and stuff like that. A beautiful thing, except when the pollen lands instead in your nose and your body's like, you don't belong here. Turns out like 8% of adults have some kind of allergy to this. So it is recognized as a foreign body. And so the immune system just kicks in and it's like, you shouldn't be here. So it does the same things that it would do to fight off a germ. And repeated exposure, it still keeps doing that. It's like, you're still a foreign body and I'm used to fighting you off. So I will keep doing that.
I love one of the reasons why this is a problem. We're too clean in this country. We take too daggum many baths.
Yes. And I'll
have to live with that problem. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, but seriously, I think there is a little bit of truth to this. Not too, so much honestly. As far as don't take showers or whatever, but you have all of these things that – you know, here's your hand sanitizer, here are your wipes, and here's the spray that you spray down your counter with, and sterilize everything. And so
and
now...
And forbees it if it doesn't.
Yes. Yeah. And now whatever comes in, anything that comes in, your body's so used to this sterile environment rather than kind of being able to exercise the immune system in a healthy way. Now you get anything coming in and it's like, uh-oh, that's foreign. I don't care what it is. That's foreign. Got to kill that.
It's the rise of overuse of antibiotics, whether it be in the food or the ones your doctor prescribes.
I mean, you take very many Z-Packs, you know, they don't work quite as well as they used to, you know. I don't take a lot.
And then you're going to develop some drug-resistant strain of mutant Ebola that kills everybody.
It really does. The
virus loves your antibiotic. Yum.
I thrive. I like the cockroach, actually evolve. Yeah. Hello. Yeah. But it does make it more difficult when you have to get some things that'll help you breathe easier. And you got to give your ID across the across the counter to be able to get a certain type of allergy medicine. Boy, does that make you feel really, wow, I'm being carded and it's not for alcohol. This is new.
This is not illicit. I just want to breathe.
That's right. When did that become a governmental right? I don't understand. Wow. This is a fascinating article. But let me also say, for the record, Jamie reads EOL tweet feeds because that's where the music article came from. And I thought that article would get the musician in him going for roundabout. And I was right. Yay! You can read more of this kind of garbage over at twitter.com/EOL show. And you can actually get all sorts of information over at twitter.com/thatandroidshow, twitter.com/tripleclickhome. And of course, twitter.com/Sarotalk, Sarotalk. And if you want to keep up to date on Sarotech, twitter.com/Sarotek. Sarotech, where we have all sorts of information coming out about our very own company. But if you can't get your Sarotalk fix any other way and you're waiting for the next episode, you can just go there. You don't actually have to be a member of Twitter. All that stuff gets posted normally. And you can read the latest about technology and assistive technology and what we're all talking about on the various shows without having to go too far away from your podcast app of choice.
Well, that's going to wrap up the news for this week, but don't go away because I visit with Hope Paulos of Fedora Outlier, and we talk about some really cool stuff that that company is up to that you might want to take advantage of, some trainings and perhaps some podcasts, that sort of thing. So I'll visit with Hope right after we're finished right here. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Hope that you have enjoyed the podcast. As usual, keep the feedback coming. At the end of this podcast, Patrick will one more time tell you how you can get a hold of us in our many ways, as Joe just did. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Well, this week, I am pleased to be able to talk with Hope Paulos of Fedora Outlier, along with being a System Access member. Hope, you do a lot of great work for Fedora. So welcome to the Sarotalk Podcast Network.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, talk to me about Fedora Outlier. What is it? How long has it been around? That sort of thing.
Sure. We've been around for about 2.5 years. I've only been on board for about 5 months or so. I'm the Director of Teaching and Curriculum at Fedora, and that means that I am in charge of doing assessments for clients and making sure that everything goes smoothly with the instructors and the clients. We are a teaching firm. We teach everything from Mac to iPad to iPod, so the iDevices, as well as we are launching our Windows series as well. So we teach assistive technology of all kinds.
So as far as teaching, are we talking textbooks? Are we talking audio? How does that work?
Well, we have one book, one multimedia book, that includes video and audio. And it is to teach individuals how to use the iPhone. So it has 12 steps, and it is called The Old Hat Guide to iPhone Accessibility. And, of course, Old Hat is Fedora. That's how it, I think that's a clever name that they created the book, created the title of the book. So basically, it's an ebook. You can get it in electronic format with videos, or you can get it in print as well. It's $10, and I believe the link will be in the show notes.
You bet. So talk to us a little bit about Fedora, the name. I mean, you mentioned the hat, which is kind of cool, but how did the company get its name? Do you know for sure?
I do. And actually, Vashon Jones, who is the CEO, the founder of Fedora, was on a cruise, and he had this idea of creating a company for individuals who are blind and, you know, accessible technology. And he liked the Fedora. He wears them all the time. And then Outlier is, I guess it was when he was on the cruise ship. He said he really liked that name. So he was debating between Outlier Fedora or Fedora Outlier. And so he talked to his cruise mates and they decided on Fedora Outlier.
Great name and great company. They do, you guys do great work. So what kind of response have you had to the iPhone book? And what are some of the things that you've noticed that people kind of have problems with or especially need direction on as far as learning to use iOS devices?
I'm actually not the teacher of iOS, but I can tell you that gestures is one of the main issues that people have. I know that in my personal life, I'm teaching an individual who has some cognitive challenges, and he has major issues with the gestures. So we teach, this book is perfect for that type of individual who may have difficulty having motor difficulties or just understanding the concept of the touchscreen and the gestures.
So you mentioned that you don't specifically teach iOS. What areas are you yourself working on? Do you work in?
Currently, I'm teaching a client to use the Mac, and mm-hmm. I can teach all the areas, but
sure.
Somebody else is taking over the iOS portion of the clients at this point. Again, I just came on board. So,
sure.
And I am also in charge of the Windows. We're going to release a Windows Master Series at some point.
Absolutely. And that brings up a great point because not only Windows, but a Mac Master Series. Talk to us a little bit about what that's going to entail and how's that going to be distributed?
Sure. The Mac Master Series is 8 weeks of teaching, and it includes videos and a text curriculum. So there are several different ways that it's distributed. A person can purchase the Mac Master Series for $20 a month, and that provides the text and the videos. And that does not include online teaching. So if you're an advanced user, perhaps an assistive technology specialist or TVI, you know your assistive technology, and you just want maybe a refresher course, or you're an advanced user, you can purchase that for $20 a month. The next level is the $250 a month. That has support, teaching and support. So it has webinars, classes that you can attend, as well as the text. With each of those distributions, you have one part of the curriculum coming out each week. So you're not overwhelmed. You're not given right. The entire curriculum. You're given, sure. One part of the curriculum each week. And I'm sure that a syllabus will also be given. I know that you teach at a university. So mm-hmm. syllabi are yeah. really important.
Yes, they are.
I'm sure that a syllabus will be given as well prior to the start of the series.
And again, how many weeks did you say it should take to complete
8 weeks.
This? Okay. Okay.
Eight,
very good.
8 weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. There's a lot to learning the Mac. I'm sure you're probably going to start with the very basics and then just work up to what, more advanced features?
Absolutely. We go from unboxing to mm-hmm. using the Finder to creating aliases to, we go pretty advanced. But
sure.
we start right from the beginning.
Okay.
So
when will this be available? When is this going to be released?
This will be available in May 15th.
Okay. Very good.
And you can sign up. Anybody who's interested can sign up. We have a newsletter that gives tips and tricks, teasers before the series is released. So if anybody's interested, certainly feel free to sign up there. And then the link will be in the show notes. And then we can also, we teach everything from Windows to Mac. So mm-hmm. we're just starting the Windows process. We're just starting the Windows teaching. So,
do you know yet if the Windows training is going to be comparable as far as the amount of time it's going to take, or do you have any idea yet? As far
I
as
don't
eight
know.
Week?
Yeah, okay. We haven't actually right. started the curriculum, but I'm assuming it will be.
So, and I realize you haven't even got these trainings released yet, but thinking ahead, because operating systems are being released so quickly now, it's such a different world than what we've ever seen before. Are you guys going to probably provide some way to take updates, refreshers when, say, Windows 9 comes out next year?
Absolutely. Yeah. We always want to be up to date on our curriculum and on our teaching, mm-hmm. You know, it's extremely important. So, and it takes nothing really to write. We've been working very hard to write the curriculum now, but once we have the framework, we're able to update everything easily. So it's not a problem at all.
Okay, excellent. Now back to the Mac. Are you going to delve into anything like pages or numbers or anything like that, or is it just strictly the OS itself?
I believe we are going to delve into pages and numbers. I know that we have text edit on there, so I'm assuming that we are going to delve into pages and numbers.
It's kind of a difficult thing because at some point you got to put the brakes on and say no more. You got to establish a few boundaries, or you'd be talking
Absolutely.
About every. But at the same time, there are some core things that a user needs to know a little bit about. Of course, if you talk about Windows, you know, if you delved into Office too deeply, you'd be spending a lot more time. So that's my hat, pun intended, my hat is off to you all for for making this work and figuring out how to draw some lines, but yet provide content that is going to be really relevant and useful to the consumer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we're here for. We want feedback and we want to provide our motto is better than excellent teaching and support. And so we want that feedback from consumers and from clients, and we want to be better than excellent. So,
mm-hmm. Well, as you say, we'll definitely have links in show notes, but what are some good ways for people to get a hold of you? Basically all the formats that you want to mention here.
Sure. My number is 603-525-7066. And then you can email me at hope@fedoraoutlier.com, or you can email the founder at excellence@fedoraoutlier.com. And you can always visit our webpage and subscribe to our newsletter. And you can follow us on Twitter at fedora_outlier.
Mm-hmm.
And LinkedIn.
I'm sure there's
as well.
Facebook if anyone wants it.
There is Facebook, absolutely.
Yeah.
Fedora Outlier LLC. We have it all on our webpage. So if you go to www.fedoraoutlier.com, you will be able to follow us in those various ways.
Excellent. And of course, you can go to our show notes and grab links from there as well. Well, Hope, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk with us. There's a lot that people can check out. So I would advise anyone listening, if you would like some training, and who can't use a little bit, honestly, I don't care what operating system you're using. There's always things to learn. So check out our show notes, go to fedoraoutlier.com and start learning.
You've been listening to Ceratalk. Visit us at www.ceratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@ceratalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. Thank you.